Today on Rambling About Cars, we're falling down a tundra rabbit hole. Actually, we have many rabbit holes to follow because there's a new Wrangler, a version anyways. There's a new Honda Civic, a version anyways. And we're going to talk about some summertime fun here later on. So summertime superstars, it's podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith. Across the way is Chris Bruce. It's been a week, man.
Yeah.
Today has been the longest week I've had.
Yeah, I know you've had some issues, but hey, we're rambling about cars now.
We are rambling about cars. And it's all good. So yeah. Let's ramble away. What are we going to get into first? Because there's a lot.
Well, let's
cover.
Start with the Tundra stuff, because although the Tundra hasn't debuted yet, the Tundra is kind of sort of debuted.
It sort of did. And to give Toyota credit, I have a big shout out for Toyota for what they did with this leak, because that
especially their PR team. Yeah,
that was brilliant, Toyota. Well played.
Yeah, I'll have an image up here in just a second for our YouTube folks. But basically, to kind of tell the story, it was Friday or Thursday of last week.
Oh, it was Thursday, I think.
Anyway,
if you have an article, okay, you got the article. I was about to pull that article up too. So that
whatever
was June 18th.
Was I can't remember if that was Thursday or Friday. Regardless. Right. A bunch of folks started reporting on Toyota Tundra images leaked out. We didn't put them up immediately because we were subject to the embargo. And, you know, we all try to play nice with these things. Right. But it was kind of one of those things where the snowball just kept on rolling and rolling and rolling. And there was a point where it just had to be covered. And then Toyota, as you said, to their credit, just came out and said, yeah, here's the image of the exterior of the new Tundra. Everyone else has leaked it, so we might as well just put it out there too and not pretend that there's still an embargo in place.
And to be clear, that's what we're looking at right here on YouTube. By the way, we have our new YouTube channel, Motor One Podcasts.
We do.
So if you're listening and you want to jump over there, Motor One Podcast, you can see what we're talking about. That is the image that Toyota put up on social media late in the day on June 18th. I had actually written the article. Mm-hmm. That's me on the article. I wrote the article, and then towards the end of the day, I'm about to log off, and it's like, holy crap, okay, Toyota just dropped this on social media. And I think their post was something like, you people can't keep a secret. And that was it. And then they just put up that's an image of the TRD Pro. And I mean, it's just one single image showing the outside. So that's, you call that an official debut. We obviously still don't know stats on the new Tundra,
but that's how it's going to look. That's the other thing, is that we kind of sort of maybe do.
I mean, a little bit through the teasers, things that have been released.
Well, no, I'm talking about through Bob Carter at Toyota talking about it. Where he was talking about the engine. We were going to kind of get to this later, but I'll just hit it now. Yeah. He came out and straight up said that the new engine has more horsepower and more torque than the current engine.
Right.
And they put out a teaser that shows, basically it shows the engine cover, and you can clearly see three embossed sections on one side, on specifically the left side of the engine cover. So generally the way every other automaker does it, you see three embossed sections, you assume it's a V6 because there's three on one side, three on the other side. Granted, it's a plastic engine cover. Maybe there are more under there, but every rumor we've heard about this vehicle says that it's a V6, and that this teaser indicates that it's a V6. Mm. We think it's a turbocharged V6. Like, we don't know, but every bit of evidence is pointing to that. And the funny thing is that the new Land Cruiser that we were recently talking about, it debuted. And what does it have? But it has a twin turbo V6.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And if you look at the specs of the two of those vehicles, the Land Cruiser's V6, it does beat it on the Tundra's 5.7 liter V8 on horsepower. It's down like, it's down like 1 or 2 pound-feet of torque. Like, it doesn't quite beat it, but you could imagine maybe you reroute a little bit of plumbing, maybe you turn up a little bit of boost.
Oh, there'll be abuse. There'll be some abuse.
Yeah, turn up a little bit of boost, and you end up with an engine that has both more horsepower and more torque. Right. So, yeah, we think that there's going to be that under there. And so that's kind of nice. You know, you're going to have more horsepower. You're going to have more torque. You got, what do you think of the looks of it? I waited until now to ask you this.
I was about to ask you the same thing. You know, I don't know. And browsing around some of the Tundra forums, some of the Tundra groups, you know, it's a really mixed bag there. Those are the people that are really into the Tundra. I've seen a lot of comparisons to full-size Chevrolet trucks, specifically the 3/4-ton trucks with the big grill and kind of the, you know, the goofy looking eyes for headlights. So I think it's about 50-50 from what I've seen from the Tundra people. For me, I mean, I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's necessarily ugly, but I don't know.
I think it's something
over style. I want to look at. They're definitely going for the big truck grill. They're definitely going for that truck theme of bigger on everything. I mean, with the big Toyota branding in the grill, just the size of the grill itself, it looks like it wants to eat hatchbacks and small children. I mean, that's a clear trend. And to be honest, I've never been a big fan of that trend. Just being big for the sake of being big doesn't sell it for me. Make it look good.
It's very like Tonka truck. Like it's the kind of truck you'd play with when you were 10 years old in the sand. You know, I don't necessarily love the way it looks, but from everything we've heard, Toyota itself and Toyota dealers are really excited about this truck because they think it's actually going to give them a real competitor against the big three for the first time kind of ever. Because if you look, you know, the F-150 sells 1 million units-ish a year and has for decades. The Tundra sells 120, 110.
Yeah, it's a very small number. Comparatively,
yeah, it's, you know, so maybe finally they think that they're going to have something that is a real competitor.
But you know, when you look at the F-150, and especially when you look at the new Ram, they both have a fairly large presence about them without having a frankly ridiculous looking grill that the Tundra has here. I mean, I think the new Ram is actually a really handsome truck done well. If I was in the market for a new full-size truck, that's actually where I'd go. Toyota with a Tundra, I guess I feel like maybe they're trying to mimic Ram from like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Back when their grill was still just way, way oversized compared to the rest of the truck.
Like semi-truck huge, yeah.
And I mean, I certainly see the comparisons here that people are making with the 3/4-ton Chevrolet pickup trucks. There's a lot of similarity in just that big brash grill with kind of the smaller headlights on the side. I mean, I think it looks better than the Chevy. I don't like the new Chevy trucks at all. Not the half ton, not the 3/4-ton. So it's better there.
So I wrote up this story, and I actually have to give a reader credit for this because I didn't think of it at the time. But when this commenter mentioned it, like, it all kind of clicked in my head. So we got this rumor out of Japan that there is going to be the Lexus LX 750H, which in their nomenclature, basically it means a hybrid engine with a bunch of power. And that it is going to be the 3.5 liter twin turbo V6 that we're expecting the Tundra to get with hybrid assistance to make 480 horsepower and 642 pound feet of torque. We know from what Toyota has been saying that there will be an optional engine in the Tundra, but they haven't been saying what that engine will be. But maybe, possibly, it's this. So, you know, you get twin turbo V6 with hybrid assist, with, you know, a boatload of torque, good amount of horsepower. I gotta wonder, you know, we don't know this for sure, but a reader kind of mentioned that, yeah, maybe that's the same engine that the Tundra is going to get that Lexus is going to be using in some of their vehicles. So
I tell you, I mean, if that's a straight install, Toyota would have quite a vehicle on their hands. I mean, if they want to go after Ford,
right,
Ram and GM, that could be a way to do it. And yeah, this is some of the mystery that we're still waiting for.
Right.
Toyota decided to debut their exterior look of the Tundra, the TRD Pro anyways, Now we're still waiting for the rest of the story.
Well, we have seen a teaser of the interior, and I'll throw that up now. And it's truly a teaser. You can see the very, very top of the infotainment screen. It's a widescreen kind of design.
It'll be a big screen, big surprise.
Yeah. You can tell just from the image, it's going to be a bigger screen. Yep. You can tell, I would guess from the way that rear view mirror looks, that it's going to be kind of one of those mirror displays that we're seeing in a lot of vehicles these days. Other than that, we're not seeing a lot in this teaser image, but it does give you an idea that it's going to be a very tech forward, tech focused look for the new Tundra. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of the issue is that we've seen in the past is that the Tundra launches and then Toyota doesn't really iterate on it and upgrade it over time. So I don't know if that's going to change for the new generation, but like, it seems like this is a truck that's going to launch and be very competitive out of the box. And then I just hope that Toyota kind of keeps iterating on it and keeps updating it, because, you know, Ford, Chevrolet and Ram are all going to keep updating their trucks.
Oh, yeah.
That's just what they do. It's almost like every 2 years, if not every year thing anymore, that you see a very major update for their trucks.
Yeah.
Even if they're on the same platform. But yeah.
I mean, this could bring some more sales in for Toyota. I honestly don't see Toyota taking a big strike out of the Detroit brands with this. Just that is such an established group. I feel like you really have to change the game completely if you want to step into that group. And instead of changing the game completely, Toyota is just trying to mimic what they're seeing. Sorry, Toyota.
I wouldn't say that they're mimicking what they're seeing. I would say they're matching what they're seeing, and they're not trying to top it. And I think that is an issue, that they are going to come out and be competitive, but in 5 years' time, I wonder, you know.
It'll be interesting to see how people respond, because this is going to go on. Does it go on sale? I know it's going to debut like fully officially just later this year, but I don't know if it's going to be on sale by 2022 or if it's going to go on sale early next year. I don't think we know specifically on that yet.
If you ask me to put down gambling chips, I would say it's going to be on sale super, super late this year, like kind of a November, December. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for certain. I'm just guessing, because we're judging by what we've seen by the teasers and stuff like that, we're kind of expecting this to debut in the next month to 6 weeks. So that gets you out in July, early August. It's going to be made in the US. So maybe possibly you're going to see them in dealers very, very late this year. If not, I would say next spring, certainly.
Okay, well, let me jump us to something that's pretty much available to order right now.
Sure.
And folks, we can actually call this breaking news, because, of course, we record this earlier in the week. And this news is coming out Friday morning. And that is a new version of the Jeep Wrangler. Imagine that. It is a version to compete with the Bronco.
Maybe. Kind of, sort of.
By compete with the Bronco, I mean it's the first Jeep Wrangler to come from the factory with 35 inch tires. It's called the Wrangler Extreme Recon Package, and that's pretty much it. I know, as this news comes out, people are going to be talking about it, but honestly, it's a little underwhelming, because really, the Wrangler Extreme Recon Package includes 35 inch tires from the factory on 17x8 beadlock capable wheels. And Jeep is also going to give you a 100-to-1 crawl ratio for ultra slow off-roading. The one thing that this does do by adding those tires, it technically gives the Wrangler best in class off-road stats, which we know Jeep is going to just be pushing like crazy. The approach angle goes up to 47.4 degrees. The departure angle at the back is 40.4. The breakover angle is 26.7. You have 12.9 inches of ground clearance. You can go through 33.6 inches of water. Don't try to go through 33.7, because that's just silly. But 33.6 is okay. And for the folks that have been following the teaser campaign, that Jeep has been pushing. That's what these cryptic numbers have been all along, is talking about approach departure angles. We sort of knew about that ahead of time because we had embargoed information, but as these teasers are coming out, we have to report on them, right? So we have to be a little crafty.
Yep.
Throwing out a little bit of smoke and mirrors there on hybrids and things, but no, those numbers, it's all about the approach and departure angles. I don't have any pricing information on this yet. Mm-hmm. We don't even have an article we can share with you yet, because like I said, we're recording this on Wednesday. Technically this news doesn't break until Friday morning. So as you're listening to this, if you're listening to this, just as the podcast goes up on Friday, this is brand spanking new news. We're bringing it to you right here, right now on Rambling About Cars. And Bruce, how afraid of the Bronco is Jeep?
Oh, very.
I mean,
they're terrified. They're clearly terrified because because every time Bronco news comes out, there is some sort of Jeep challenger. When the Bronco first drive stuff came out, that's when we heard about the Jeep 392. It was something like that.
I think that was back when Bronco actually debuted.
Okay.
They said, oh, by the way, I think if
that
it wasn't
was when
the same
the concept
day
came out, and then
yeah, like, that was the when the concept specs
came out. Like also timed perfectly.
Yeah, timed stuff perfectly. So I mean, we're doing Bronco first drive stuff now. Here's this new Jeep that technically, it's got the 35-inch tires, just like you get with the Sasquatch package on the Bronco. So, Jeep. I mean, I get that you want to have a competitive vehicle. And I don't think Jeep will lose a lot of sales to the Bronco, but
they're going
to
lose some.
I think they're going to lose some. And honestly, the way Jeep is going forward with their effort, with their campaign to keep Jeep a little more relevant, the Wrangler a little more relevant in the face of Bronco, to me at least, and listeners, if it's that way to you, I want to hear about this podcast at motorone.com. To me, it is painfully obvious that Jeep, they're taking these steps specifically to try to slow Bronco momentum.
You have a PR background, you have a marketing background. What else do you do? Like, clearly, this is the first legitimate Jeep competitor for decades. So maybe the FJ Cruiser, maybe, but before that, it takes decades to get to a legitimate Wrangler, CJ, whatever competitor. So, yeah, this is the first time they've had to do this for a while. I guess I respect the PR team, whether or not the products are good or great or whatever, but I at least see what they're thinking.
I mean, I see what they're thinking, but with my background, I mean, the first thing for me is, you don't play your competitor's game. You set your rules and you make them play your game. And right now, Ford has all the cards.
Yeah.
Ford is making Jeep play their game. And guess what? Jeep is playing it. Like you said, they're going almost step by step by step. When Ford has a major announcement on Bronco, Jeep is right there to try to counter with their own announcement.
Absolutely.
Jeep needs to play their own game. They don't need to be responding step by step to Bronco. That's not going to slow Bronco's momentum. Mm-hmm. People that are interested in Bronco, they're already there. They're not going to give a rip that Jeep has a 400 horsepower Wrangler that can do 0-60 in what, like 4 seconds or 5 seconds. Cause I mean, that's what Jeep Wrangler people have always wanted, right? They want their Wrangler that can go 0-60 that fast. No, that's not what Wrangler people want, Jeep.
Yeah.
They'll sell some of the 392s. They might sell all.
Oh, they'll sell everyone they make, but they're not going to make that many.
They're not going to make that many. You know, the hybrid, the Wrangler 4XE, or sorry,
4xE.
The 4xE. That's how you're supposed to pronounce. Everybody's going to call it 4XE. You have two lowercase letters. I don't care what Jeep says. It's going to be 4XE. The Wrangler 4xE hybrid. That's a good move on Jeep. You're not just simply responding to what Bronco's doing. You're one-upping them, because Ford doesn't have anything like that. Now Jeep has something that they can say, hey, here's something that you can get with us that you can't get with Bronco. I mean, what is Jeep staying right now? Their big selling points for the Wrangler against the Bronco. They're trying to tell their dealers that upsell the solid front axles or the solid axles on the Wrangler. The off-roaders are going to like that better. Maybe, maybe not. But you know what? I think a lot of people are going to like not having death wobble a lot better. Right. So
that kind of sort of gets into something I wanted to ask. And yeah. Are we getting into a point where, let me try to think how to phrase this. Are we getting into a point where Jeep and Ford specifically, maybe with the Sasquatch package, also with the Recon Extreme, that you are compromising on-road ability, which you are going to be at for most drivers 90-95% of the time. Maybe if you live in certain places, 60% of the time. And I think that's even generous versus off-road capability, where you're building a truck or building an SUV that is very, very capable off-road, but is compromised, for lack of a better word, on-road. That
absolutely.
You just can't use as well for most daily tasks. That
absolutely. And I mean, how many Jeep Wrangler drivers aggressively take their Wrangler off-road? And when I say aggressively, I'm not talking, hey, we'll go down some two tracks, we'll hit some mud. I'm talking about the guys that are like going to Moab, places like that. Yeah, sure, a lot of them do, but you know what?
It's a lot in like quotes. Is it 20%? I bet it's not 20%.
And just about every one of those people out there, they don't have stock vehicles to begin with.
Sure.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Just for the sake, you know,
and I don't either. It's just,
but I would,
we're getting into a weird place.
I would venture to say a vast majority of Wrangler drivers aren't getting that aggressive off road. When you're not in those aggressive situations, those solid axles suck.
Yeah.
I mean, just be straight up honest. And that's not to say you can't do aggressive off-roading with independent suspensions.
God, no. Yeah.
I do understand why Jeep is trying to push that. It's because it's really the biggest difference that they can say the Wrangler has versus Bronco. So they'll try to spin the Bronco's independent suspension, which I think will work just as good, if not better, in extreme situations, as the Jeep's solid axles. What else were they talking about? Oh, a selling point that Jeep is trying to get their dealers to follow up on with the Wrangler is that you can buy so many more aftermarket accessories for the Wrangler than the Bronco. And I mean, yeah, sure.
But it's been around a whole lot longer.
It's been around a lot longer. And there
are
companies
that have been established that are basically a cottage industry of building Wrangler accessories.
For me, it comes down to Jeep basically telling their customers, you should buy our product because you can go get somebody else's stuff for it much easier than you can get somebody else's stuff for the Ford. And I just find it completely. No, it's not okay. It's desperate is what it is. It's desperate on Jeep's part. They are trying so hard to find selling points against the Bronco.
Yes. I'll agree.
And you know what? Just stick to the Wrangler's heritage. Stick to the Wrangler's pedigree. Remind people, hey, the Bronco is new. The Bronco looks like it could be pretty good. We've been around for decades. So let's see what happens once the Bronco gets into people's hands. In the meantime, here's our Wrangler. Here's what we got for you. Here's what it can do. You decide. We don't need Jeep shoving this stuff down people's throats. Jeep, you have decades of pedigree with the Wrangler. You don't need to play Ford's game. You don't need to try to match them step by step for Bronco. That just screams desperation. So that's my rant on the Wrangler. The Wrangler Extreme Recon Package, Jeep says it's available. You can pretty much order it right now. We don't have any pricing. But, you know, again, 35-inch tires from the factory, the 100-to-1 crawl ratio. You have better approach, departure, breakover, ground clearance, water fording. For what it's worth, I'm ready to see Wrangler and Bronco head-to-heads off-road.
Oh, yeah. So while we are talking about new vehicle debuts and while we're kind of finishing out this first segment, let's talk about one that, as we are recording this, it hasn't technically debuted yet, but by the time we are done recording, it will have debuted.
Right.
And that is the new Honda Civic hatchback.
And I haven't seen this yet. So everybody listening, if you haven't seen it yet,
well, there you go.
I'm right here with you. I think it looks like a Honda Civic.
I mean, that's what it looks like.
Once upon a time, wouldn't an automaker debut their vehicle and, you know, debut the vehicle in whatever forms it's in? I don't get why there's a big deal over debuting the hatch separate from the sedan. But hey, they're trying to get more mileage out of it. And I can appreciate it.
Yes. And I mean, they've got, what, 4 stories out of us? They got the live stream of the sedan, the debut of the sedan, and now live stream. Like, you know, I can't blame them. I can't blame the PR folks. But yeah, it looks like a Honda Civic, the new one. The major difference at the front, I'll zoom in here for anyone watching the video version, is you can see the hexagonal grille. The sedan has slats, much like in the lower fascia. I kind of like it. It's not a big change. Obviously, the much, much bigger change is at the rear, where you get the sloping rear roof line because it's a hatchback. Interestingly, Honda says that rear hatch is made out of a composite material. They haven't said what that is. I don't think it's carbon fiber, but still, that the rear hatch is a composite material. Also, the rear opening versus the previous gen, here, let me show you the rear end here, folks, versus the previous gen, that the opening is a bit larger. I believe it's 1.6 inches larger. Let me pull that up as I'm talking about it. But there you can see the rear end, that sloping. Looks good to me. One of the major differences versus the sedan is that it has this a light bar that kind of goes underneath the rear spoiler that spans the two tail lights. So as opposed to having two discrete tail lights, you kind of get this unified look. To me, that's more attractive. I like it more, but your mileage may vary. Any opinions there, Smith, while I'm looking?
I mean, I know you've been a little critical of the new Civic for being just kind of bland and boring. And
I prefer this one than the sedan.
I prefer this much more than the sedan. I prefer the previous generation Civic hatch over the sedan.
Sure.
Yeah. I just think the hatchbacks look better in general. I really like the look of this. I like it a lot. Yes, it is quieter. It is considerably more subdued than the previous generation, which I thought was actually just way too overstyled. It had too many angles. It had too many vents. I was trying to do too many things at once.
Do you notice something? We are looking at a photo of the interior right now. Do you notice anything special about that interior, Smith?
Different from the sedan.
Yeah.
Nothing's jumping out right in front of me here.
You can get it with a 6-speed manual.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yep. You can get either the
what
Sport
is wrong with
or me? The Sport wow. Touring with a 6-speed manual. So the Sport is the 2-liter naturally aspirated 4-cylinder with 158 horsepower. The Sport Touring is a 1.5-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder with 180 horsepower. Mm-hmm. And either of those are available with either the 6-speed manual or the CVT. The CVT is available across the line. But those two, the Sport and the Sport Touring, you can also get a 6-speed manual. Mm-hmm. And that's different from the sedan. In the sedan, there is no manual available at all. Mm-hmm. So
now, if I've driven the previous generation with the 1.5 turbo and the CVT, and I was actually, I mean, that's all I would need in that car. I mean, you can always want more horsepower, right? But
of course.
I mean, for a decent daily driver, I was actually really
impressed. Daily driver, 180 horsepower, and that's going to be fine. Yeah.
The way that power and the way the CVT used the power. I mean, some CVTs I've driven are just terrible. And I thought that one did a really good job. So I'm really anxious to drive this car. I mean, that could be a legit replacement for the old Mazda 6, which I just got back from the shop yesterday.
She's been costing you some money recently.
another $330 to replace all the, we just replaced all the coils on the back bank that are buried up under the intake manifold. I mean, that could be a legit replacement for the 6. I mean, with the hatch, it looks like it has some decent space back there.
So
I'm a fan of that model. And yes, it's conservatively styled. I guess if I had to say anything, I would like to see a little more jazz in it, I guess. with styling.
I think you're going to get that from the SI though. Like,
right.
You know, and we know a Type R is coming. I don't know that that's going to be available in the hatchback body, mm-hmm. but you know, I still think, you know, if you want more power, want more aggressiveness, the SI and the Type R are going to be the way to go. But honestly, after looking, writing up the story and looking at the specs of the two and looking at kind of the differences, I don't know why I would get the sedan over the hatchback. The hatchback seems better. They also, they tweaked the suspension and steering to be just a little bit sportier on the hatchback. The image we're looking at now on YouTube is with the hatch open. And I should say that the rear cargo space has decreased just a tiny bit. On the new one, it's 24.5 cubic feet. On the previous gen, it was 25.7 cubic feet. So a difference of 1.2 cubic feet.
Just a little bit.
Not a lot, honestly.
Not a lot. Not a lot. No, I think, well, to answer your question about why you would buy the sedan, you'd buy the sedan if you're price conscious, because the sedan will be cheaper. Correct. We don't have pricing yet, but
$1,500, $2,000, maybe.
I mean, there will always be a little bit of a difference in price between the sedan and the hatch.
You're right.
The hatch will always be a little bit more.
You're right.
So the people that go for the sedan, I mean, they'll be the ones that try to catch that $180 a month lease deal, probably.
Yeah. No, you're not. Which wrong.
I mean, that would be that'd be a decent car at that lease price. But yeah, I'd be hatchback all day long.
Yeah.
All day long. Do we got some time to talk about Porsche? Because I'd like to talk about Porsche a little bit.
Let's do Porsche real quick. Let's do like a 5-minute Porsche thing. Yeah,
we can do a 5-minute Porsche thing because, I mean, let's be honest. There's always room for Porsche, right? There's always room for more
Especially
Porsche.
Especially the one we're about to talk about, because there's one of these is the one I would get.
There's always room for more 911s. Bruce, I can pull this up here if you don't have it, if you don't have it handy.
I don't have it directly handy, but I'm pulling it up now. So you start and then I'll go.
Well, here's the debut article. The Porsche 911 GTS is out. Now, what is the 911 GTS? The GTS slots between the Carrera and the Turbo. Mm-hmm. It adds the Carrera S and the Turbo. It adds just a little bit more horsepower. You're getting 473 horsepower on that. That's actually 30 more than the Carrera S. So, I mean, it's not a huge jump, but it is a jump. Of course, you can get it with the PDK or the manual. The GTS also has a tweaked suspension. It's a little bit tauter, sits 10 millimeters lower. It gets the brakes from the 911 Turbo, though. So, I mean, that's a decent upgrade in the braking department. Visually speaking,
you just basically get all of the good stuff from you get a mix between the Turbo and the Carrera S. You get some stuff from the one, some stuff from the other, and it's just kind of a great package. And it's worth mentioning all 911s are turbocharged now. So,
right. Yeah, but, I mean, turbo these days, it's become more of a status thing. They're all turbocharged. Of course, the 911 Turbo model has significantly more power, significantly more boost. But this car will still do 0-60 in 3.1 seconds. That's not slow
for anybody.
That is not slow, people. That is not slow at all.
And here's what I was going to say is that mm-hmm. you can get it with the Targa, which to me. That's the best looking 911 current. Like the hardtop is great. But if you add a 911 convertible or a 911 Targa, it's the Targa every day. It just looks so much better. And you can get it with the GTS package. And so you can have that extra oomph. And you can't get a 911 Targa Turbo. So mm-hmm. this is the top Targa that's available.
Yes. You can get the GTS. One I would buy. You can get it in all forms. Coupe, yes. Convertible, Targa. Rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive. It starts at $136,700. I mean, that's not cheap, but...
No.
I mean, 0-60, 3.1 seconds, though? I mean, I still think that's just a hell of a price, I think, for that kind of performance. And, of course, the GTS, you're going to get more standard equipment that you know than what you'd have to pay for on the lower model. So there's always room for more 911s, and the GTS, I mean... How do you choose when you go to the Porsche dealership? How do you choose?
Like, I was thinking
I
can just
get the Carrera or I get the S or I can get the GTS. I mean, it's
I would be hard pressed if, and I don't have the money for either of these fully, to be honest. I would be hard pressed between a Targa GTS or a 911 GT3 Touring, which have debuted within 2 weeks of each other. They both have their advantages. I love them both, and I don't know which of those two I would throw my money down on. I honestly don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, the GT3 is going to be a little bit more hardcore, even in touring mode. It's going to be more hardcore.
It totally is. But you're not going to have that open roof experience with the GT3,
right? I mean, a GTS Targa with the manual transmission.
I honestly don't know which I would choose. They're both fantastic, and it's just funny that they've debuted within, like I said, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 10 days of each other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, since we're talking about Porsche also, it won't be breaking news for people on Friday, but here literally about an hour before we started recording, Porsche announced a new partnership. I don't have the article available. Porsche announced there's some new parts installed on the 911 GT2 RS.
Yep.
And they just sent a new Nürburgring Nordschleife record with it. 6 minutes, 43 seconds dead.
Here, I can show you that. So Monte Racing.
Yeah, that news just came out about an hour ago before we started
this recording. So Monte Racing, they just won this most recent 24 hours of the Nürburgring. Mm-hmm. They are, Porsche said, basically they are a semi-factory Porsche team. They're independent, right, but they are very, very, very closely linked. Mm-hmm. And they have released this new tuning package for the 911 GT2 RS that Porsche is putting the info out on to explain how close they are related. This is not just some tuner that's out there building stuff. This is the company actually putting the info out there. And so they have released this tuning package, and it set a Nürburgring Nordschleife record.
And that's a street legal car. That's not a race car. That's street legal car. 6 minutes, 43 seconds.
Yep. Which is stupid fast. 6:43:30.
I love Nürburgring records, but I also recognize the absurdity of Nürburgring records because the track is so big.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many corners. There are so many technical areas. It can give you a general idea of a car's capability, but put any super experienced driver of that track behind the wheel. And I mean, I feel like you can always find a 10th somewhere. Right.
So the thing about the Nordschleife is that it's almost like a golf course that even a very tiny mistake can kind of multiply over the course of the lap. So, you know, that when we usually look at racetracks, a 10th of a second or a 100th of a second matters. On the Nordschleife, it can be a second or a second and a half or 2 seconds or something like that, because it's, you know, a 12.8 mile. It's mm-hmm. 20 over 20 kilometers over that distance. That any little thing kind of makes a huge difference. So.
Right. There's so many areas that you can make up just a little bit of time, mm-hmm. but still Porsche impressive feats. And please send your 911 GTS to me in South Dakota.
Yeah. Or a GT3 Touring. I'll take that.
And send one to Mr. Bruce as well.
Yeah.
So we're feeling generous today. Let's talk about some comments.
Exactly. So thanks to everyone who has been watching us on Motor One Podcast. Again, if you're not watching us there and you want to watch us rather than listen to us, please go there. That's where we are now. Mm-hmm. We are no longer on the main Motor One feed. But we have been getting some comments there, both on YouTube, also on the post that we put up on Motor One, and also from our email, which is podcast@motorone.com. So wherever you want to get in touch with us, we love it. And we kind of want to read some of your stuff.
Our audience is definitely growing. And we're very grateful for that. We're very grateful to have you along. More importantly, our audience, it's growing, but they're also engaged. And that's what we've wanted since day one, because Bruce and I rambling about cars, that can be fun. We would love to ramble with more people. Seriously, we might even bring you on the show because
we've invited some of you on the show. You haven't necessarily responded, but you're invited.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we're rambling about cars. We love to talk about cars. Let's talk about some of these comments here.
Okay. So I will start with this first one that I'm looking at. So this was from a comment on the post that we put on Motor One. So great episode as always. Love your perspective on making Alfa Romeo profitable. Worth noting that after the podcast went live, two things happened. One, more Alfa Romeo stories made their appearance on the main page at Motor One. Thanks. And two, Alfa Romeo rumors began circulating that Alfa Romeo was going to make an electric GTV. Keep up the great work. And yeah, so that I think Monday, I want to say, is that one came up that there are rumors that Alfa Romeo is going to revive the GTV name and they're going to call it, it's going to be electric. And that's cool. So I hope it happens.
As we were both saying, I mean, electricity has to be in Alfa Romeo's future if they want to go forward. Yeah. There's no way around it. It could be a good thing. I mean, there's some history there with the name. So Alfa Romeo, keep listening. We've got more advice for you.
Smith, I think you and I are looking at the same doc here. Do you want to do the first YouTube comment or?
Yep. Cool. So here's what we had on our YouTube channel. And again, hey, thanks for the comments, good or bad. We appreciate them.
We try to respond to all of them.
This was a good comment. Rambling About Cars is a great show title. Actually, there's an interesting story. I wasn't for Rambling About Cars as the title. I was very passionate about some other ones that I can't even remember what they were now. So
yeah, we had a bunch.
That tells you how little I know about actually what I'm doing, because Rambling About Cars is an outstanding name. So thanks for the title. Anyone who is expecting Wikipedia encyclopedic level knowledge, vehicle knowledge for every obscure thing from this podcast is the worst case of internet idiots. Let's not go too far here. There are people have their specialties. They know certain things about certain models.
Yeah,
that's cool. But yeah, nobody's going to have knowledge of absolutely everything. The title gives zero pretense beyond some dudes who probably like cars and know some stuff about them, just talking about them. And I am so okay with that. At that level, you guys are definitely underselling and over-delivering.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Enjoying the fun rambling. Haters going to hate and internet idiots are going to try to acknowledge snob. Truthfully, even if they outknow you on their specific corner, sliver of the car kingdom, I am sure in a Jeopardy-style contest covering a wide range of car stuff, they would not do nearly as well as you guys. Keep on podcasting. Well, thank you there. We've got a little bit more. I'm going to read this here as quick as I can. My mini ramble below. I love my current base 2.0 liter 2019 Auto Veloster. I've had four Mustangs. Most beloved was my custom ordered 91 LX 5.0 notchback auto with the GT interior and wheels all black.
It sounds badass.
I had a 92 LX 5.0 convertible that did not have the GT interior. It had what my friend called the porno red interior from that era. So I'm with you on that one. My weirdest car was an early 2000 Saturn View that was both an early compact CUV and a four banger stick shift. I remember that vehicle.
We talked about that in the chat, that you could get the View with a manual. And in fact, I had a friend in high school whose mom daily drove one, and I got to ride it at once. So they existed.
Well, and you had the red line version of the View that they did for a while. It was actually kind of a hot little crossover. I mean, I remember that back in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Comment goes on to say, I think the new Maverick is a great idea, and my family had two of the originals. It is what I learned to drive with. My brother made a muscle car out of one with a 289 high performance V8 dropped in. Tell you what, a lot of people did that back in the day with the Mavericks. That was a great little platform.
Late 70s, early 80s, to make the Hypo 289. That thing would be sweet.
To make a little hopped up runabout. Yeah, I've seen quite a few of those, and we love them. Also looking forward to a fun $25,000 electric compact in the next few years, but need 200 miles of range to make it work. Holler, guys. Woohoo. Well, thank you very much. Oh, wait, there's a second part.
Is there?
Oh no, that's a second YouTube comment. Yeah, I'll let you read the second YouTube comment.
I'm getting that one. Yeah. So this is the other comment we got. I like listening to you guys because you're both from Ohio and the Great Lakes area and have experience. But damn, you all make me feel old sometimes.
Wow.
I remember when a convertible was offered in every model's lineup, and if a car had 200 horsepower, that was the road beast. And he says his name, but I won't repeat it. But thank you.
In Ohio. Yes, I'm from Michigan, even though I'm in South Dakota right now. I spent most of my life in Michigan. I'm enjoying
South Central Michigan, right? Like, that's not.
I was all over, man. I was born in Southeast Michigan. I was born just north of Ann Arbor. So, I mean, I kind of grew up in that. It's, you know, right there in that Ann Arbor area where Car and Driver, and I can't remember, you know, some of the other magazines headquartered right there. So, I mean, I kind of grew up in that area, and my father was he hauled cars for General Motors, and he worked out of the Willow Run plant. And so, I mean, I kind of grew up in the car scene right there. And then I went to college. Well, I moved to Northern Michigan for high school, went to college in Western Michigan, worked for a while in Eastern Michigan, worked for a while in Central Michigan. Yeah, all over the Great Lakes state. Represent.
Very cool. I'm an Ohio boy. Just real quick, born in Northeastern Ohio, spent all through high school there, went to college in Southern Ohio, and then lived in Germany for a little while, and then came back and ended up, lived a little bit in Indiana, and then came back and ended up in Northwestern Ohio. So
I love how casual you are on that. Yeah, I was in Ohio and lived in Germany for a little while. You just went halfway around the world.
For 2 years. Like, it was not.
I bounce around the state. You're definitely more traveled than I am.
Anyway. Okay. Do you want to do the last one here, or do you want me to take it?
The email here, comment. The email, that we got.
Yeah.
So we got this through email. First off, I think your friend in Michigan, and this is reflecting back on last week's episode, right at the very end, where I was asking people for some advice. A friend of mine in Michigan is looking to get a new vehicle, new to her vehicle, looking for some advice, probably something crossover-ish. So that's what this is in regards to. First of all, I think your friend in Michigan would be well accommodated with a CRV. And we actually, several of us have recommended the Honda CRV would be, I think, a good fit there. But the new Nissan Rogue is finally an elite SUV and should probably be considered. And I think that's actually a very good point. I think the Rogue kind of goes under the radar for a lot of people, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the Rogue isn't it in like the top 10 best-selling vehicles?
Yeah, it was like 9 or 8 last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those that you don't even realize is selling like hotcakes. It sort of goes under the radar. That's a good possibility as well. The comment out then wraps up here. Also, I was wondering, what is your favorite premium SUV? As an example, Lamborghini Urus, Aston Martin DBX, the Porsche Macan, etc. Love the show. Well, thank you. We love having you comment. My premium SUV. I mean, I'm really digging the Genesis GV80. I mean, I don't know that it's in the same class as what we're talking about there. I mean, those are kind of like super SUVs.
Yeah. See, my first answer was G class. If I was going to buy one of that kind of class of SUVs, G class would be the first one I'd look at. But
yeah. I mean, I guess it's something I haven't really thought about because I'm just not interested in SUVs, but you know, sure,
I can't afford one either. So
the GV80, I think the GV80 just looks great all around. I'm not interested in crazy performance in an SUV. It just seems like an oxymoron to me. I know there are SUVs out there that can do those sorts of things. I mean, if anything, I would probably go for like a Trackhawk or something with just ludicrous power.
That's not what I thought about.
In a straight line. And then for actual luxury, man, I mean, the Genesis is just killing it right now. So
they are.
That's kind of my hot take. What are we moving on to next here, Bruce?
So we wanted to talk just a little bit about fun things to do with your car in the summer, and specifically fun places to take your car in the summer. So just offhand, kind of the things we're going to talk about here. You're going to car shows, going to car races, going to the drive-in movies, and maybe even just going to a drive-in restaurant, depending on where you live. Maybe it's Sonic, or I was always a fan of A&W. I don't know if those are nationwide, to be totally honest with you, but I like an A&W. Like, just so, yeah.
A&W. I haven't heard A&W in a while.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know if they're, I mean, being in, they were all over Michigan.
Yeah, and they're all over Ohio. I had one like the next town over, but so I don't know if that's a national thing or not, now that I think about it.
I don't know. I don't know that they're, I think there might be an A&W out here in like one of the truck stops, but I mean, it's not the drive up A&W like.
Oh,
like,
see, mine were the drive up and like, they like the waiters or waitresses would come out and take your order. But like Sonic does that, right?
Oh, yeah. I've got three Sonics out here within like 5 miles of each other. It's kind of
ludicrous. I don't have any out here.
And the one of the Sonics, it's on Mount Rushmore Road, which, as you might imagine, eventually takes you to Mount Rushmore. That's actually kind of a hot spot for the local car scene. Every now and again, you'll have a car meet that they just take over Sonic.
So and that combines both car show and the drive-in that I was kind of hoping to get to. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's some of that goes on out here.
Cool. Yeah. There's nothing like that around here. Like in prepping for the story, I was looking for, the drive-in movie theaters that are around here, and there's nothing great. There's one that's pretty far away, but you and I were talking about this before the show. The one near you, they must have really good social media presence because their photos look fantastic. And you were telling me they were not that great. This is called Roy's Black Hills Drive-In. Mm-hmm. And so I will be showing some images here. And you said you've been there.
Yep. Been there a few times. They're not bad. I didn't mean to make it sound like it's kind of a terrible hole in the wall. I think the pictures are generally a little more generous. That's a beautiful South Dakota sunset backdropped against the screen. But I mean, the parking lots are, it's all gravel. They're a little dusty. There's kind of patches of grass growing up in spots here and there.
It's a drive-in. Like, of course you can park. What do you want?
The concessions. I want people to come out to the car in tuxedos. Exactly. I want them to serve me white glove service with chilled shrimp. I gotta have my shrimp cocktails. It's not a bad place. The pictures I think definitely make it look a little bit better. It sort of sits down kind of in a little valley. I think that must be the west facing screen, because that looks like I can just see a little bit of the Black Hills outlined behind it there. They actually have two screens. There's an east screen and a west screen.
I don't know which one this is going to be that I'm about to show. It's a bit less romantic looking in terms of the photography, mm-hmm. but still, like, maybe I've been cooped up inside too long and haven't had a drive-in in long enough, but that looks great, man. Like,
it's not bad, but the grass just looks kind of janky. If I was running the place, I'd try to have the grounds looking a little bit better.
Okay, fair.
But it's not bad. That was, if I remember, I think that was an event they did. They broadcast like a live Metallica concert.
Oh, okay.
On both screens. And, a lot of people show up. I've been there two or three times now.
Okay.
It's typical classic drive-in double feature thing. They have mm-hmm. two screens, the east screen and the west screen. You get a ticket for one of the screens. You can't switch.
Right.
You
get two movies for that. So
right. The movies start out here right now in the summer. The movies probably don't start till about 9:30 or so, just because it stays daylight out here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember
really late, earlier,
but
really late. So you'll get the first movie and then those like about a 10 or 15 minute intermission. The second movie starts. Of course, I mean, you can leave after the first movie if you mm-hmm. want. I'm actually seriously thinking about going there Saturday night because the new Fast and Furious movie comes out. I'm not super interested in seeing it, though, to be honest. But
drive-in, you can sit there with your wife, you can have some pop. Like, The thing about a drive-in movie is not so much about the movie. It's more about the atmosphere. Like,
see, I care about the movie. I've been married a long time. This is going to make me sound horrible. It's like, we went there to see Wonder Woman.
Okay.
It's like, well, this will be
fun. By the way, I've been married. I believe this is going to be my 10th wedding anniversary. So it's not like I'm a newlywed here either. But
I think we went there. I can't remember if it was an anniversary thing or maybe her birthday, but it was like, well, let's go see Wonder Woman. And it was in the middle of the week. Okay. And there was like three cars there and we were one of them. And Wonder Woman was the late movie. So we had to get through. I think it was like Lego Batman was the first movie. And it was like, I just did not care. And I was sleeping through the first movie. I felt really bad, but then Wonder Woman came on, but everybody's used to sitting inside a movie theater, right? Where you can see the screen pretty clearly. Outside there on the darker scenes, I mean, it's a huge, huge screen, mm-hmm. but you're still some distance away from it. So it was kind of tough to see detail. So I just remember thinking Wonder Woman,
it's never going to look as good as it is on your TV or in a movie theater.
Right.
Like, that's what the romantic part is that it's,
So this winds me. I do have a point with this story because this winds me around to Fast 9.
Okay,
I'm not totally interested in seeing it. I don't really care if I miss details. I was really, really anxious to see Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. so I was a little bummed that I couldn't. It didn't look as good as I wanted. But Fast 9, that might be good for the drive-in. And Roy's Twin Black Hills Drive-In, they announced they're going to do a show and shine on Saturday.
Oh, cool.
Inviting cool cars out. So I thought, well, I haven't done anything car related this year with the Mustang. So, you know what? Maybe make sure I've got a nice coat of wax on it. Head out there because the gates open at 6:30. And if it's a nice Saturday, I mean, there'll be a good amount of people there. So I might do the drive-in experience this weekend. And if I do, I'll talk about it next week on the podcast. Okay. I've been to that drive-in a few times. There's a drive-in back in Michigan that I went to. I don't know if it's still open. It was the Capri Drive-In, I think was the name, in Coldwater, Michigan, which is right down on the southern end of the state, not too far from the is that the Ohio or Indiana border? It's right there near where Ohio and Indiana meet. I remember that experience being much, much better, to be honest. The grounds were laid out a little bit better. There was just a single screen. Again, a double feature.
Wow, this place is out in the middle of a field. I'm looking at it now. Hold on.
It is. But I tell you what, I mean, you go out there and cars would be lined up for like 3/4 of a mile down the road waiting to get in.
Here's their homepage. Like, it's just.
I went to see. This shows how long ago it was. Click with Adam Sandler and RV with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So that's what? That's like mid-2000s. And I tell you what, watching Click with like a row, because we went with the car club, watching Click with a row of car guys. I mean, we're all sitting in our cars watching this. And you can hear just everybody just laughing so hard that they're farting in their cars along that whole front row. I mean, that was a good experience. Compared to Roy's, I think the Capri was just it just felt a little more classy. But Roy's isn't bad. They have a decent concession in the middle where you get popcorn, you can get wings, you can get nachos, things like that. So, I mean, it's a good experience overall. People that are listening that have never done a drive-through
Capri, real quick. Here's an older. I want to see all of these movies. So they're playing Scooby-Doo, the whole 10 yards, which is the whole 9 yards sequel.
Right.
Keanu Reeves. I want to say Kill Bill 2 and Walking Tall, which I have to imagine is
what
the
a lineup.
Remake with The Rock.
It's gotta be the remake.
I want to be there all night.
Like, well, they have two screens as well. So I don't know if it's the same way there that it is here. You buy a ticket for one screen and you see those two movies. I guess you can buy tickets for both screens, and then if you wanted to switch screens, you can. But I mean, you tune to a special FM radio station. which is the only thing that makes me nervous. It's like, okay, do I want to have my car battery on for like 4 or 5 hours? I think they have like jump boxes and things there for people who can't get their car started.
I just assume you just leave your car running, but
I wouldn't leave the Mustang running. I would probably kill the people that parked behind me. Plus nobody would be able to hear. But for folks who haven't done a drive-in, if you can find one near at least once, I mean, it's a cool experience to have.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, they were big way back in the day. They're still out there now. The pandemic brought some of them back. I mean, I've enjoyed all the times I've gone to the drive-in. I wasn't really super interested in Lego Batman, but it was all right. And yeah, if I go this weekend, I'll be talking about it next week on the show. We'll see what happens.
So real quick, this is one I drive past to go to my mother-in-law's house when my wife and I go there. So this is not something I would just go to, but it's 30, 40 miles away, something like that. But what I like is that they have on their one screen, they do new movies. So you can watch Fast 9 and Nobody, but their second screen, they do old movies, so you can watch E.T. and Back to the Future, and I know 100% which two I'm picking. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm watching E.T. and Back to the Future. Like, that's just perfect.
Now,
that's
last,
what you want from a drive-in.
Right, and last year, I think Roy's out here had a couple of retro nights where they did that during the pandemic, I think. I can't remember offhand, but I mean, yeah, it's a great experience to have once. Let me do a quick share of this article that I actually wrote way back in 2017. And I'm sorry to say, I mean, I tried to follow up on this to see what ultimately happened. And from what I gather, it just went bust. It never made it. This was a place. Where was this at? In Tennessee? Yeah, it was the August Moon Drive-In currently, or back then, being planned for Nashville, Tennessee. And the concept was, it's an indoor drive-in where, I mean, just this big open arena, you drive inside. I think that's what it was, or maybe, oh no, that's what it was. The cars were already set up inside, so you weren't actually driving your car in. You were parking outside. You were going inside this huge complex. You buy your movie ticket. And then say you buy your ticket to go sit in the Corvette, right? Or you buy it to go sit in the 57 Chevy.
I mean, in the age of social distancing, that's genius. Those guys were just too early to a fantastic idea.
And there were other seating options available. They were planning like a full bar and a full restaurant. What was it? 40,000 foot air supported dome. Not unlike many sports arenas.
Yeah, it's like almost like the tennis courts they put up with the air domes.
I mean, I remember writing this like it was yesterday, and it was freaking over 4 years ago. And I eventually tried to follow up to see what happened, and apparently it just kind of it just faded out.
Yeah, because in 2017, 2018, they didn't have the funding, no one wanted to buy in, but like now, when even there are still, you know, a lot of people that kind of want to keep clear of strangers,
you know,
for safety reasons.
Yep.
That would work completely. You go sit in some cool old car and you watch a movie. Like,
that would have been
just ahead of their time.
That would have been a huge thing in coronavirus 2020.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just, it didn't work. I don't know. I haven't heard of any other places that are trying to open up like that. It sure is a great idea though.
Yeah, it is. So another thing we want to talk about in terms of summer car stuff are car shows. And I just so happen to be talking with a guy who knows a thing or two about car shows because he's organized a few. So the story we're looking at now is South Dakota Airplane Museum holds creative virtual car show. And this is from last year. And we're looking at a C2 Corvette park. What is that? A T48? Am I wrong?
That is a T37.
T37. Okay.
More importantly, I think it's a T37. I'm kind of flanking out here. Now I have to look it up really quick, Bruce, darn it, because I can't be wrong on my airplane stuff. No, that's not the T37. Oh my God. The T37 was a small little kind of dragonfly thing.
I think it might be.
What is the trainer version of the F5? because that's really what it's a T-38. Oh my God.
Okay. So I said T-48. It's a T-38. Okay.
Why did I flake on T-38? I'm so ashamed. That's the Northrop T-38 Talon. It's only been used in the United States and several air forces just for decades and decades. But there's a cooler story that actually goes along with that.
Okay. Tell me.
There's an infamous, and maybe Bruce, you can probably look this up while I talk about it. General Motors had a classic
Corvair image
press photo where they had their Corvair parked next to a U.S. Air Force T-38. And guess what? That T-38 right there at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum is the exact same aircraft used in that sort of famous General Motors PR photo with the Chevrolet Corvair. And I've been trying to get somebody with a Corvair to come out to the museum and do a recreation of that shot. South Dakota Air and Space Museum is outside of Ellsworth Air Force Base. I've been affiliated with them on and off since I've been out here. I've managed to serve on the board of directors for a little while. And yeah, it's a great little museum. People are like, there's a space museum in South Dakota. But yeah, South Dakota used to be home to a gazillion ICBMs that go into space. And Ellsworth was the headquarters for some of those missile wings. So yeah, there's actually quite a bit of history out there. And I came up with the idea of a fundraiser a few years ago. Let's do a car show here where we park the cars with all of these vintage aircraft. And it's been a big success. I've done other car shows in the past. Last year was a challenge, obviously, because of the pandemic. The base had strict regulations with regards to masks and social distancing. And rightfully so, because, I mean, these are the people defending the country. If things go wrong, they need to be healthy and ready to go. So, and technically the base, the museum is on base property. You don't actually have to go onto the base to see the museum, but we had to follow these rules. So we came up with an idea of basically a virtual car show. We still had cars there. Oh, there's the image.
Yep, anyone watching on YouTube? There it is. That's the press image. There's the
aircraft
plane you just saw.
The aircraft looks different, obviously. This is back when the Talon was still very much in service with the Air Force. But that registration number, 81192, that doesn't change. And 81192 is on the aircraft out here in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. So we did a virtual show where we still had cars show up. But instead of everybody parking together at the same time, we had professional photographers on site. People came in. They had one of five aircraft they could choose to park with. They parked with the aircraft, took their photo. We put it up online. There was online voting. And the show was actually a big success. So we got base approval to run it at the height of really the pandemic. I guess not the height, but at a point where everything was really shut down. So I was really proud that we were able to pull that off. And yeah,
September of last year, that was borderline the height. That was
yep.
Just as things were breaking. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, I mean, I'm sure if you're listening, you've probably at least gone to a car show. If you've ever had a car that you've put in a car show, I mean, that's a completely different experience. I've been in car shows quite a bit, really from when I was younger up until just right now. Even if the car you have isn't that great, you would still be surprised. Go to a car show. Go ahead and enter yourself in a car show. You'll be shocked at the amount of people that want to come up to you, that want to talk about it, that want to share their experiences with that car. Whether it's something extraordinary, you know, like a supercar, a classic hot rod, or I don't know, something like an AMC Gremlin that doesn't usually get a lot of love, but it's deserving of love. You will find somebody at a car show that still loves the Gremlin. So car shows and summertime, man, hand in hand.
Here, vamp for me here just a second, because I actually have a really good example of that. I went to a car show in Zanesville, Ohio, which mm-hmm. if anyone knows Zanesville, Ohio, it's probably only because of their pottery that they were famous for back kind of around the turn of the century. But I went there with my uncle, and there was just all sorts of interesting stuff that showed up, that this kind of this what you would call kind of a middle of nowhere town, rightly or wrongly.
Well, you know, on that same token, when I moved out here to South Dakota, that was in 2014. I was expecting, okay, it's South Dakota, it's Rapid City, it's a decent sized town, but it's just going to be pickup trucks out here. And I was shocked to find some of the most diverse car culture I've seen anywhere. There's a huge Subaru group out here. There's a huge Volkswagen following out here. The first Nissan second Nissan Skyline that I've ever seen in the United States was out here in freaking South Dakota. That's the last place I expected to see a Nissan Skyline, and that was an R32. Car culture will survive, and it'll survive in the strangest places. There's a huge drifting group out here. They hold regular events, sanctioned events. I think some of them probably go out up into the hills and do some unsanctioned stuff that we probably shouldn't mention. I am not part of that, by the way. I drive a Mustang that wants to go off the road by itself automatically. I'm not going to tempt fate, you know, on some of these mountain roads. But yeah, man, there's car culture is everywhere. And you'd be surprised when you step out just how many people you'll find that are into it.
But yeah, so if you're watching us on YouTube right now, you can see this is a Corvair van, the van version of the Corvair. Funnily enough, we were just talking about Corvairs.
Yeah.
But this was the ambulance for Zanesville, Ohio. You can see the emergency on the front, and you can kind of just see the plaque for it on the right there. And then you can see the fire department's Jeep also on the right, that this is in the late 1960s, this is what serviced that area, and someone kept it up and kept it on the road and kept it alive and brought it to the local car show. And if that's not cool, I don't know what is. That's a vehicle that actually served the community, and rather than scrapping it, they kept it in gorgeous condition, and it's still around. And yeah, like I said, what is this from? September 2nd, 2018, I got to see it. So that's only just a few years ago. And that vehicle's still around. And that's kind of special. That's one of the interesting things about automobiles, is that in addition to being fun, that they can serve a purpose and that they can help people or do things. And that's kind of what we're looking at here. And it was cool to see. So that's why I snapped that photo.
No, very cool. And I hate to be cheesy and corny, but it's kind of what our podcast is all about, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I mean, rambling about cars. Yeah, it's cars, but it's also the experiences that you have with them. It's also the people that you meet with them. Without that, you're just talking about pieces of iron and steel, right?
Right. Without someone to drive them, cars are nothing. That without someone to get behind the wheel and to enjoy them and to have a story about them, a car is, like you said, just a bunch of iron, steel, aluminum, and maybe these days, maybe some carbon fiber. That there's nothing there. That
a little bit of carbon fiber.
The story behind them is what makes them. And so that's what's special.
Why don't we take a moment here to tell everybody to share your story with us? Podcast.
Oh, totally. We love hearing your stories. That's why we love getting your comments. That's why we read your comments, is that we want to share them with people. Whether you're the guy with the Saturn view with the manual transmission, you and the mother of the guy I went to high school with, I think I've never heard of another one. So I'm just going to assume there two of those were sold. but yeah, like that, the stories are what make cars. Otherwise there wouldn't, no one would care.
So share your stories with us, share your car show stories, whether you've been to a car show, just as a spectator, an experience you've had being in a car show.
Sure.
Talk to us about the car that you've taken to the car show. Talk to us about the car that you saw at the car show that was for sale, either missed or you made the impulse buy and pick it up.
For just a second. I have got such a good one of those, of a car that I still think about today.
So this is a car you saw at a car show.
This is when I saw it at a car show
that you were going to buy.
Yeah, and it was for sale.
I've never been in that situation. Well, let's be honest. I go to a car show, like every other car, I'm like handing out a card. Hey, if you think you might want to sell this, give me a call, right? I mean, everybody does that. I've never been at a car show where I saw a car for sale where I take that back. Out here, the Rapid City they hold a big car show right downtown. They close off downtown. They'll mm-hmm. get like 200, 300 cars. And there was a guy selling a C3 Corvette a couple years ago. And my wife is fine with the Mustang.
Okay.
She's not really thrilled with convertibles. And I did make it a little loud. And she's not very thrilled with that, but she loves the C3 Corvette. And I love the C3 Corvette. So we're at the show. This was a couple years ago, and there was a C3 Corvette there, and it looked good. It didn't look perfect. I mean, it had a few flaws, but I love that about car shows. I don't want to go to a car show and see an award-winning vehicle.
No,
in every spot, because it gets overwhelming, and it's like, I don't know how to appreciate this vehicle when there's something just as gorgeous next to it, right? So here's the C3 Corvette. If I remember correctly, it was yellow, which I'm not a big fan of yellow, but on the C3, I mean, it was working. It was an automatic transmission. I would rather have the manual, but she would rather have the automatic, and I know it would be a car that she'd drive. And it's got the T-tops, and I think it was probably like a 78 or so, 79. So, that's the kind of the low point power wise. That doesn't really matter to me. It's not really hard to get more power out of that 350 or even swap in something else. Right. So we're looking at this car and I'm talking to her like, do we sell the Mustang and get this? I mean, if I do that, I like the Mustang, but this C3 is just cool as hell. Do we sell the Mustang and get this? And she was kind of non-committal, and the owner of the car happened to be nearby. So the owner comes up and he starts talking to us about what all he's done to it. It's like, shit, now I'm caught, you know, now we have to talk more about this. And now we have to even maybe think a little bit more about this. So yeah, that's my experience.
So unfortunately, I cannot find the photo that I'm looking Uh-oh. For, but,
tell us about it. Tell us about it. And then we'll wrap up here.
Well, I can give my dad a shout out here. Here is the one that he missed out on. So we're looking at a Porsche 356. Unfortunately, for reasons my mother wasn't able to be there at the time, it was for sale. I want to say it was 15 grand. And this was a time before cell phones. Let me see if I believe this was a 2005. Yeah, this is 2005 image. And so this is his one that got away. I'll have to look through my computer, but yeah, that's
yeah, a good one. That's because those are kind of valuable now.
Yeah.
Plus, it's just a gorgeous
car. And you can tell it's not, you know, it's got some kind of the bumper is kind of hanging weird. It's not perfect, but also it's a good one. So, yeah,
I think this might be a topic we have to bring up again
for a
future episode. I feel like we could talk so much more about this, and I would love to talk about this with people's input. Yeah. With your experiences, with your car show experiences, with your ones that got away. So last time for the episode here, podcast@motorone.com. Email us, catch us on Spotify, catch us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts. We're on Audacity. We're all over the place.
We're everywhere.
Anywhere you can get
an audio podcast, we are there. And on YouTube, Motor One Podcast, you can find
Motor One Podcast. Yep. Comments anywhere you want. Comment on the articles we put up on Friday. Comment on YouTube.
Yep.
And I'd love to hear your comments.
Good recently bad. About replying. If you comment, I'm probably going to reply within a few days. So.
And I need to try to reply more. I apologize. So people keep busting my butt on that. So Bruce, I think all that's left is to wrap us up here.
Yeah. So good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Whenever you happen to be listening to us, we appreciate it. We love talking about cars. We love talking about cars with you. So thank you. Thanks for spending your evening with us or your day with us or whatever it happens to be. So bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.